Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cathal Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us through WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm all right. I actually... last night, Mark and I went out to a great place that I've been to a couple of times in Brooklyn, which is just the center of gravity of New York restaurants. It seems switching a little to Brooklyn. And we went out to a really inexpensive, wonderful barbecue place with wonderful, wonderful barbecue.
The word casual is is overused.
It's a garage. It's a garage.
It really, if basically somebody took a, we'll call an 8-car garage, and turned it into a ginormous restaurant.
And by turned it into, he doesn't mean they did anything to it. He just means they put some ovens and food in there.
They did not paint it. We know that for sure.
Nope.
Put some chalkboards
up. They put in
a
glass garage door, a glass, like, folding garage door, so it's open with it. And it's totally casual, seat yourself, cafeteria-style table.
Super casual, cafeteria casual, like I might get a splinter when I'm sitting on this bench.
But the food is great, and I think the atmosphere is exactly what people are looking for today.
It
good beers on tap.
Spectacular.
Great whiskeys behind the bar, and no back bar, just shelves on a
You walk up, and just to give you a little bit of feel for the place, you walk up, you stand on a long line, because there's lines.
And you have a cafeteria tray, basically.
They set up the cafeteria tray for you, but you go, and last night they had Berkshire pork shoulder you could buy for $19 a pound. You can buy a half pound, quarter pound, full pound, whatever you wanted.
But this is not to go. This is to eat there.
Right. Berkshire pulled pork. They had Angus beef brisket that we had, which was delicious. They had short ribs, which were great. A bunch of other things. We basically tried everything. Garlic sausages that they made. Everything was just wonderful. And so you say, well, I'd like a pound of this, a half pound of that, quarter pound of this, 4 pounds of that,
and
off you go.
You left off one side, which is just, I think, incredible, is they're baked beans, but they call them burnt end baked beans, and it's basically all the burnt ends from all the barbecue stuff they do that they throw in there. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Any time you can make my beans just tastes like they're more pork. That's the way I want to eat them.
Feta sau. We'll put the link up on our website.
It was really, really terrific. And some great beers on tap. And the place was fun and convivial. And, it's a place you're going to go. And
cheap
spend,
as hell.
And not very expensive. You're going to go and you're going to spend 45 minutes with your friends. But, I mean, think about the fact that, it's $19 a pound for Berkshire pork. Average person would eat about a half a pound. So if you bought one side, you spent about $13-14.
Yeah, no.
But you did sit on a picnic bench.
But they had real beer. All the
oh,
stuff,
yeah. Some really good beers.
And some decent wines. Everything's in mason jars, as I recall. Mm-hmm. Is it in mason jars? Did I get that right?
Some kind
Something
of jar.
Like that, yeah.
Some kind of jar, yeah.
But, no, good stuff. Fête de Sal. While we're on the topic of New York, I mean, I know we are global, our global Restaurant Guys empire. We speak to restaurants all around the world. But there's an insane bill in New York, which is fairly local to us, though we're in New Jersey. We're in the tri-state
area. Actually insane. It's actually insane.
Anyone who said Mayor Bloomberg's voluntary, anyone who's talking about Mayor Bloomberg's voluntary sodium ban, talking about that, you know how that's a problem. Check this one out. New York Assemblyman Felix Ortiz has introduced a bill that would ban the use of any salt in the preparation of any restaurant food in the state of New York.
Do you feel like Felix hasn't thought this all the way through? Do you feel like maybe he's just... He hasn't taken this from.
He doesn't know anything about food.
He doesn't know anything about food. I mean, don't sponsor bills about things you don't know anything about.
I mean, there are pastries you can't make without salt. There's dishes that everything will taste bland and awful.
No, what I love about this bill, and I did read the bill all the way through. What I love about this bill is, it would remain legal for me to buy Doritos and sprinkle them over the top of your food. But it would not be legal for me to sprinkle salt on top of your food.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
You can't
salt cure anything. No curing.
You can't salt cure.
No more cured salmon. No more.
Cured salmon.
Not allowed to have cured salmon. You idiot. Okay.
There's almost no, let's face it, almost no food in a restaurant is made with zero salt.
No
food, almost
nothing. And if you're doing it right at home, almost no food at home is made with zero salt.
Right.
I mean, you should use a judicious amount of salt, but I mean, the food just doesn't taste that great. Here, he gave an interview to Nation's Restaurant News. What he says, what he hopes to accomplish with this is, he says, in this way, consumers have more control over the amount of sodium they intake and are given the option to exercise healthier diets and healthier lifestyles. And joyless, flavorless lifestyles, Felix.
Well,
oh, my.
What's really ridiculous about it, and I'm sure that he's going more at fast food type places, but still, what's really, really ridiculous about this is, in most real restaurants,
mm-hmm.
You could say, if you really wanted it, you know what? Can you just cook me a piece of chicken, no salt? I'm on a low-salt diet.
Yep.
And 90% of restaurants would be able to do that for you.
Does he realize that this is simply just going to make all the food in all the restaurants of New York City taste bland and
okay.
awful?
Does he realize that there is no possible chance that this bill will pass?
Yes, yes. He's an insane cookie
okay.
man.
Does he, 'cause there's no chance. There's no chance I mean, everybody in, now I'm being a little generous here, but everybody in the legislature is not an idiot.
I wouldn't go any further than that, Mark, but I think, well, you know, and he's talking about, there's teeth to this thing, too. We're talking about $1,000 per instance fine on any restaurant that's put salt in the whatever,
in the stock, in the everything that needs salt, okay? Everything needs salt. I think that when we talk about salt, and salt, let's just continue to talk about salt. I think people don't realize how much more salt there is in processed food as opposed to what you would put on or in the soup that you make.
Sure. It's there as a preservative. Mm-hmm. It's there because in the processed food, you need to have a lot of salt to make that stuff palatable. Mm-hmm. Processed shelf-stable food is a very different thing than fresh food.
Salt is something that will preserve the life of your of whatever it is. So when you're putting things in something that you need to preserve for a very long time, salt is a great ingredient. And lots of companies are using a lot of salt, more salt than you think they are.
You know, it's funny. I just read an article recently about how cocktailians and mixologists are starting to use salt in certain drinks mm-hmm. because salt has an interesting effect. And this is relevant. When things, it tempers the bitter flavor of things. When you salt something that's somewhat bitter, it tempers the bitterness, which, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons that is in all this processed food that's shelf-stable food. It tempers the bitterness. It makes things seem softer.
We actually had a cocktail last night that I know had salt in it.
And which one?
One of the cucumber cocktails we had.
Interesting.
Makes perfect sense. I'm sure of it.
But where they're talking about reusing salt in the bar now, they're talking about when you use a cocktail that has a lot of Amaro or other bitters in it, that putting salt, just a pinch of salt in the cocktail, can really mellow that out. I haven't played around with that yet, but it mm-hmm. sounds like a pretty reasonable idea. So.
Well, and like I said, we talk about all these processed foods. Things that we consider harmless at home, Campbell's soup, for instance, that contains about 40%. Now one can, remember, is two servings.
Right.
So a can of Campbell's soup has about twice as much, has about 80% of the salt that they recommend you take in an entire day.
Yeah.
It's a lot of salt for your soup snack, your after-school soup snack. And I think that, again, people don't realize. Look at that salt content on the backs of those prepared foods. There's more than you think.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I'll tell you is, in restaurants, there's probably less than you think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we probably use less salt than you think to make things. And think about
Mark,
when you make things at home.
Mark.
Yes, sir.
I think in the barbecue restaurant last night, there wasn't less salt. I think it was a salt festival last night in the barbecue.
There was vinegar. There was all sorts of.
But if you're not in
yummy goodness.
If you're not in the barbecue restaurant, then I think Mark's probably pretty close to the truth. Yet another insane bill. They have real stuff to worry about, and they do this. No salt in the restaurant. Well, we'll be back in just a moment or two. We're going to be talking with David Gumpert, who's written a wonderful book on raw milk, and the state of the union and the state of raw milk are inextricably tied, and we'll explain to you why in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Hello.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we are talking today with David E. Gumpert. He is the author of a book called The Raw Milk Revolution, Behind America's Emerging Battle Over Food Rights.
David, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
David, your book was really great. This is an issue we've covered in the past, and but it's an ever-changing, exciting, and dynamic arena in which the government's lost its mind.
Arena is a good word, I think.
But there's a lot of, you know, and the other reason that I think there's not complete outrage over the way the government's acting in this is that there is some complexity to the issue. You know, you can't explain it in 3 or 4, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, you know, it's not...
In a 45-second commercial.
Right, it's not very sound-biteable.
No, you're absolutely right.
So, you know, there is some complexity here, and I think that's wonderful that you wrote this book on it, detailing the issue as well as where we are in the battle for raw milk. As you know, out there in listener land, in many states, raw milk is illegal to varying degrees or very, very tightly regulated at the very least. David, why is... there this battle over raw milk? Why is it illegal in the first place, and is there any merit to making it illegal?
Well, that's a kind of a historical question that you're asking. Raw milk, you know, obviously, for hundreds and hundreds of years of human history, raw milk was the only milk,
right?
And that's, you know, it's the milk that's talked about in the Bible, and that's it's the milk that you know, that our founding fathers drank and their families. So there wasn't any distinction. What happened was during the Industrial Revolution, when the cities became settled in the mid and late 1800s, you had this tremendous migration of people to the cities. The cows kind of came with them. Mm-hmm. And you had, because you had all these people settling in the cities, and there was this demand for milk, and so but what happened, because you know, you had really the first feedlots. You know, we talk a lot today about how terrible feedlots are. Well, if the first feedlots were even worse than the ones we know of today,
well,
they were set up often in the middle of cities,
and
you had lots in New York City.
And what you had happen as a result of that was that cows were fed in a not very nutritious way.
They were fed badly. Plus the lack, there was just a total lack of understanding about the importance of sanitation, the importance of refrigeration, and there was little understanding of disease. So you had often the people milking the cows had tuberculosis or typhoid, or they carried these diseases, and milk is a medium for supporting pathogens if they are around. So you had lots of kids especially getting sick from milk. You had people getting sick, though, from bad water. I mean, they didn't understand sanitation for milk, but they didn't understand it for water and for other foods.
So you
had a lot of sickness going on. And people, and a lot of kids dying, and so that's out of that situation in the early 1900s, you had pasteurization take over,
which was really an important change, I think, for that time period, where they couldn't identify the pathogens, so this heating process killed those pathogens, and I think that a lot of people who are against raw milk think that, you know, people don't understand that, yes, that was a really important thing that happened in our history. We're really glad that it happened. It just may not be as necessary today as it was then.
Well,
exactly. But I think, you know, what we're taught in our schools, and I was certainly taught this way, that, you know, that Louis Pasteur came up with one of the great innovations of modern times. And the first time I drank raw milk, I wondered if I was going to die.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy when you think about that, because as you said before, this is the milk that was mentioned in the Bible, and the human race did not go extinct, nor do we have a tremendous record throughout human history of people dying because of milk production. Now, when they industrialized the milk production, well, what basically happens is industrial milk is often dirty milk, or at least it was in the Industrial Revolution, and so if you have dirty milk, you better pasteurize it. But at the same time, historically, that the milk was being that the pasteurization movement was gaining ground, there was a certified dairy movement. And these were dairies that were in the country feeding their cows well, treating the milk well, and you used to be able to get certified to be able to sell unpasteurized milk. But they sort of lost out when pasteurization became mandatory to allow for industrial milk practices.
Yeah, and what you have today is the government, and now I say the government, I'm referring to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration primarily, along with state agriculture and public health agencies, saying that really things haven't changed. And that's really not true. I mean, they're saying we solved that problem in, you know, in 1910, 1920, 1930, and through the, you know, 1900s as pasteurization took hold in more and more states around the country. And so they're saying we solved that problem. Don't open that whole hornet's nest again. And but there are obviously, you know, more and more people who are saying, hey, we don't want our milk processed.
You know,
we want milk directly from the cow. We know that the situation has changed. The risks are a lot different. They're certainly a lot less. The pathogens that caused problems then aren't the pathogens that cause problems today. The pathogens that cause problems in milk today only cause problems occasionally, and they're the same pathogens that cause problems in other foods.
Well, before we go on to why milk is being treated so differently from any other food, and how the government treats foodborne illnesses through milk very differently than it does other food, talk to us a little bit about, and we've had Ron Schmidt on a couple of years ago, and we've talked before about the benefits of drinking raw milk. And I'm not asking for your opinion on those benefits, but what do the people say who are real raw milk advocates? Why do they so desperately want milk that is not pasteurized?
There are a number of reasons. There are actually a couple of surveys that, I mean, a lot of people just like the taste, like the texture.
It's I do.
Very
it's,
rich,
it's
rich tasting.
It's delicious.
Yeah, it's very creamy and delicious. But there also are people who feel that there are health benefits, that their kids don't get sick as much, they don't get as many strep throats. They feel that it certainly people who have lactose intolerance often find that they can't consume pasteurized products, but they can consume unpasteurized dairy products. There is something on the order of 30 to 50 million Americans who suffer from lactose intolerance.
Yeah, well,
you have that issue. You have some data actually out there from Europe which suggests that children who consume raw milk have fewer problems with asthma and fewer problems with allergies.
Now let's hold on right there and talk about
all of that going on.
Let's talk about something that you bring up there that's pretty important. You know, I know we as Americans tend not to look outside our borders very often, but raw milk is available. What's the status on availability of raw milk in other countries, and what's their experience with it?
It varies widely. The developed world is still pretty tough on raw milk. I mean, raw milk is available in Europe, and it varies somewhat by country. France, it's available on the farm, for sale directly from the farm. I think Italy, they actually allow vending machines, from what I understand, that dispense raw milk. So it varies a lot. Canada, for example, is very strictly anti-raw milk, and there was just a big legal case up there that allowed raw milk to be available at least through herd share programs.
So let's talk about in Europe the countries that allow raw milk. What's been their experience? Are they dying off in droves because of all the raw milk illnesses?
No. I mean, there's no problem that I'm aware of. And in fact, France allows raw milk sales from the farm, but they also allow the sale of raw milk cheeses that have been aged less than 60 days, which isn't allowed here.
And so how many thousands of French people are dying every year?
They seem not to have a serious problem over there.
So you don't have thousands of French people dying every year from milk cheese from their camembert?
Healing over.
You know, one of the things I want to touch on, and you just spoke of it a second ago, is the herb share program and the way people are, herd share program, and the way people are getting raw milk and have been able to get raw milk in the states where it's partially legal, we'll call it. Can you talk about exactly how that works?
Yeah, HerdShare program involves farmers selling shares in their cows to consumers. And so you as a consumer buy a perhaps a 20% of a cow or a 30 or 40 or 50% of a cow, and you're entitled to the production, the milk production of that cow. And so you may buy one share that entitles you to, say, 1 gallon a week. You may buy two shares, allows you 2 gallons a week. And then you pay an upfront investment fee for the share of the cow, and then you pay an ongoing kind of room and board fee for the maintenance of the cow.
So the idea of this is to get around the if there's a prohibition on the sale of milk, but they're saying that if you own your own cow, you of course can drink the raw milk from your own cow. So what the people do with these herd share programs is, you can buy a share of a cow, so it's not real. They're not really selling you the milk. They're just giving you the milk of your own cow, and you're paying them to maintain that cow.
Right, and there's no sale taking place. In fact, I often usually refer to, you know, the milk being distributed. It's really not being sold because for that, for the reason you just described. And that you would think that would be pretty straightforward. I mean, we allow private agreements, private contracts between individuals in this country. I mean, kind of is the basis of our business environment, and yet there's been a lot of problems associated with it. I mean, a lot of agriculture people look at these herd shares as gimmicks.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one state that's legalized them, and that's Colorado, and they're having a good experience with it. They legalized herd shares as the main distribution means for raw milk, I think, in 2004. And I was just out there, and they're having a very good experience with it.
That's great. I just got an email, ironically, this morning from Farmer John at Angelic Organics, a guy who's been on the show a couple of times, asking people to support a farm in Wisconsin called Zinnaker Farm, which was actually closed because it was doing these herd share programs. And so now the farm has no way to make money, and actually one of the things he's asking people to do is to donate to the farm so it can keep running while it fights this legal battle. And Francis and I will put up information on the website as to
how people get involved. Yeah, I mean, that's if you want to talk about that at all. I know something about the Zinnaker farm.
Sure.
I do, but this is actually a great time to leave what we call a cliffhanger. We'll go for a short break, and we'll be right back. We're talking with David Gumpert about his new book, The Raw Milk Revolution: Behind America's Emerging Battle Over Food Rights. And this is important not only for raw milk, but it's about food rights in general and what rights we have as Americans to consume what we want to eat without the government telling us what we can and can't do, and without big business telling the government to tell us what we can and can't do. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and on restaurantguysradio.com.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with David Gumpert about raw milk and his book, The Raw Milk Revolution.
David, you're going to talk to us about Zinnaker's Farm, a raw milk dairy that has been shut down for doing herd share programs.
Yeah, I mean, the Zinnaker Dairy is located in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin has become what I would call ground zero in the whole battle over raw milk. I mean, Wisconsin is the second largest dairy state in the country, just after California, And it has actually a lot more dairy farms in California because it has a lot of smaller dairies there. Wisconsin has a prohibition on the sale of raw milk, as long had a prohibition on it. But it has, over the years, tolerated these herd share arrangements. And it decided, the officials there in the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection decided about a year ago that to change their minds, that they were going to crack down on raw milk and enforce the prohibition in the state. And so they began harassing and forcing dairies to discontinue or not allow the sale of raw milk or the distribution of raw milk through herd shares at all. One of the, kind of coincident with that, there was an outbreak of illness at one farm, and that was a Zinnaker dairy. A number of herd share owners there got sick, and I think it was from Campylobacter. I'm not absolutely certain, but they didn't get terribly sick, and the herd share owners have remained very loyal to the dairy. But the state used that outbreak to come down on the Zinnikers and to come down on a number of other dairies. Usually these dairies they distribute raw milk through these herd shares, but they also sell milk that's intended for pasteurization. They have dairy licenses that allow them to sell conventional milk. And so what the state has done is they've taken away, in some cases, they've taken away their actual, you know, dairy license, so they can't sell any milk. And then they've made them sign agreements that they won't sell raw milk or distribute raw milk. And so the Zinnikers kind of fell under that. They are, as you say, they've been shut down, at least to a partial extent. I'm not sure if it's full extent, but they are party now to a lawsuit against the state that's being handled by an organization called the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund.
You know, I want to.
It's an organization that sprang up in 2007, kind of as an outgrowth of this whole government crackdown on raw milk.
I want to talk. I want to ask you why the let's go on the other side of it. Opponents of raw milk say that it's very dangerous to sell raw milk. We shouldn't sell raw milk. There's no reason to have raw milk. What are the dangers of raw milk, and do you think they're overstated?
Well, there are dangers from raw milk. I mean, I say that in the context of saying there are dangers from any food. We can get sick from virtually any food.
We know we can get sick from spinach now.
People have gotten sick from spinach. People have gotten sick from peanut butter. A lot of sickness from raw hamburger meat. There are all kinds of ways to. But the pathogens are always there are four pathogens you can get. And whether it's raw milk or spinach or peanut butter, it's going to be one of those four pathogens, you know, Campylobacter, E. coli, 0157H7, or Salmonella, so forth. But I've looked at the data on illnesses from raw milk, and what we find when we look at this is that we have, on average, something on the order of 50 to 100 reported illnesses. When I say reported to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. For every reported illness, it's assumed that there's somewhere between 20 and 40 unreported illnesses. If you take a multiple of 20 times 100, you're coming up with something on the order of about 2,000 illnesses a year. And I think that's probably, on target. Just to kind of give you a context for that, the USDA estimated when it put in new rules for handling of eggs about a year ago, a year and a half ago, they said there were between 40,000 and 70,000 illnesses from salmonella in eggs. CDC estimates there are 76 million cases of foodborne illness every year. You can see that 2,000 is a pretty small number in the total scheme of things. And my argument is that you can get sick from raw milk, just like you get sick from any other food. But it's definitely not a public health crisis. or anything approaching it for public health, right?
Well, but to be fair, a lot more people are eating eggs than are
yeah,
having
absolutely.
Raw milk.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was just trying to give you a little.
Sure.
Nobody knows how many people are drinking raw milk, but it's probably on the order of a million to 2 million people on a regular basis.
Well, I'm one of those people who is very much in favor of allowing raw milk, but I do think that we need to test that raw milk more. We need to test that. We need to put some regulation here so people can feel safe when we're talking about their raw milk. I there are things that can come in it, but those tests are available and they're just not all that expensive. And I think if you told people, hey, raw milk's going to cost 20 cents a gallon more because we have to perform all these tests on it, that most people would say, who drink raw milk, would say, okay, it's going to cost 20 cents a gallon more.
I think they'd be willing. They already are paying usually twice as much or three times or four times as much. In California, raw milk is selling for $17, $18 a gallon.
Wow.
Versus $4 or $5 a gallon for regular milk. But they're willing to pay that because they value the either the health benefits or the taste or whatever. But I agree with you. I think there needs to be safety processes, safety procedures around production of raw milk. The problem we run into is trying to engage the government officials in some discussion about what those should be, because the FDA in particular, which kind of oversees our dairy supply, is so adamantly against consumption of raw milk in any form, any way. That they won't even have that discussion that you're talking about.
So I guess that it begs the question, why? Why do they care so much? Is it because they're trying to protect us, or do you think there's maybe something else there?
Well, they say they're trying to protect us. I've agonized about that question, and I think there are a number of reasons. I don't think there's any grand conspiracy as such, but certainly. The large dairy processors, the large food companies, are very much opposed to this because raw milk kind of cuts them out of the loop. There's not any processing to be done on raw milk. So if you're a dairy processor, you don't really see a role. I actually think that they would have a role in the distribution, but they're opposed to it. So you have these they're really huge companies like Dean Foods, which is very much involved in dairy processing, opposing this. You have a whole generation of medical people. When I say medical people, I mean doctors, public health workers, who have been taught that raw milk is a mortal danger. So they're adamantly opposed to it, and they just have a real hard time entertaining any discussion about it because. They believe that it's dangerous and they need to protect the health of the public.
When I see people advocating against raw milk, and there, it certainly has its detractors, they sort of use pictures of children in the hospital hooked up to IVs. And what kind of illnesses are we talking about that people suggest that you might be able to contract from drinking raw milk?
Well, where you see the pictures of kids hooked up to, machines is as a result of a complication of E. coli 0157H7. That's the pathogen that has made people sick from eating hamburger. It was the same pathogen that contaminated spinach. But what happens, and this tends to happen more to kids, is if they get the E. coli 0157H7, and they don't get better right away, they can have a complication called hemolytic uremic syndrome. And what that does is it shuts down their kidneys, and then they have to go on dialysis. Typically, their kidneys respond and recover, and the kids recover. But there have been a few highly publicized cases where kids have gotten sick from raw milk and had to go on kidney dialysis. There were a couple of kids in California that happened to, and there was a whole legal case around it, and it was settled. What the public health people say is, the adults can make their own decisions, but who's making the decision for the kids? And it becomes a very emotional kind of an argument because the people who want to consume raw milk say, I'm a parent, I can make the decision for my kids. So you get into this real kind of emotional area.
But that's the danger of eating any raw food, correct?
Exactly, exactly. I mean, there was a little girl who got very same kind of thing from the raw spinach in 2006, and she had the same exact same. And of course, I mean, she had the E. coli, and then she had the hemolytic uremic syndrome, and went on dialysis, and then recovered, and it was the exact same thing. It didn't matter that it was spinach. It's the pathogen that can, in the right person, that can cause the problem.
And are we sure the cases that are reported as being caused by raw milk, contamination from raw milk, are we sure they are tied to raw milk?
Well, people raise questions about it. I mean, I think that, you know, the criteria that are used to make these determinations for raw milk are the same criteria that are used for other foods. Now, people who, you know, raw milk advocates say, you know, well, that may be, but you have public health people who are biased against raw milk. And it's true, they are biased against raw milk. And so they say, well, if they're biased, they can't be as objective with raw milk as they can other foods. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for that. But, you know, I'm willing to accept the fact that the public health people who investigate these things are using professional criteria and professional experience, and I'm willing to accept that.
Well, when we come back, David, I want to ask you about the state of the legal battles and where we stand right now. Throughout the states and with the federal government, because I think that the drama and story around what's happening right now is pretty important. So we'll be back in a moment talking with David Gumpert. His book is The Raw Milk Revolution, and you're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. It's Mark and Francis. We're talking with David Gumpert about his dangerous book, The Raw Milk Revolution, Behind America's Emerging Battle Over Food Rights. So let's talk about the last part of your title, The Emerging Battle Over Food Rights. What's the lay of the land? It seems like there's a lot of fighting going on. There's some folks whose fortune and sometimes their liberty is even at risk here with the raw milk deal. Why is raw milk treated differently than, you know, when Jack in the Box hamburgers made people sick, we didn't say then, okay, no more hamburgers, can't have hamburgers anymore. Why is milk treated so differently, and what's going on in the front lines of the battle?
Well, you're absolutely right that milk is treated differently. Whenever there's an outbreak of illness from raw milk, the reaction of the public health community, the regulator community, is to say, aha, see, we told you raw milk is dangerous. And so it's kind of like, you know, any outbreak kind of proves their point, and then it becomes ammunition to ban raw milk. I mean, that's kind of where they go with it. I think that's the whole prejudice I was talking about earlier. The public health community just can't stand it. They can't stand the idea that people believe that raw milk is more nutritious for them. They can't believe that people are willing to take what they consider to be, these public health people consider to be, an unacceptable risk. So you have this this huge divide. I don't know how else to describe it. But on my blog, thecompletepatient.com, we have these really intense debates. because we have a few public health people who come on to the blog, and this just gets very, very involved and usually very emotional. Sometimes they even start calling each other names and questioning each other's motives. But you have that situation, and so even in states where raw milk is legal, like New York State and Pennsylvania, there have been terrible battles because even though it's legal, the regulators, the public health people, have tried to impede the distribution, the sale of raw milk.
Well, you have in your book, you talk about a couple of different dairies where the federal and state government really have attacked, and despite some court rulings against them, have just basically tried to put people out of business. Can you talk with us about those stories?
Yeah, I mean the charge on the legal side is being led by the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, and they have filed suit against state regulators in California, in Pennsylvania, and I'm not sure about Pennsylvania, but in New York State, in Missouri, and most recently in Wisconsin. And in fact, they filed suit, as I said earlier, on behalf of the Zinnaker dairy and a couple other dairies in Wisconsin.
So now
they've actually filed suit against the commissioner of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and a secretary of Health and Human Services.
But in the meantime, the government's federal and state are shutting dairies down. What, I mean, how are they pulling that off in states sometimes where raw milk consumption is legal or it's herd sharing?
Well, they haven't quite shut them down. I'd say they've harassed a number of dairies. Most notably in New York State and in Pennsylvania. In New York State, they've had what I would call a campaign to find listeria. And listeria is a pathogen that can infect raw milk as well as other foods, including pasteurized milk. And we had three deaths in Massachusetts from pasteurized milk in 2007. But
we should ban pasteurized milk then, for sure.
Milk is illegal for sale off the farm in New York State, and so the New York State Department of Ag and Markets goes around and tests the milk each month. And sporadically over the last 3 or 4 years, they have been finding listeria in the milk of maybe half a dozen dairies. There's one dairy they found listeria 8 times. Now, what you can say, well, that they shouldn't be finding listeria. Well, it turns out it's a more involved situation scientifically. But bottom line, not a single individual has gotten sick from listeria in all the time that they've been finding listeria. And when they find listeria, they force the farm to discontinue sale of raw milk until they get a positive or a negative test, I guess you could say. And they forced the dairy to notify all their customers that there was a finding of listeria, and they put an announcement out on the internet. And of course, that's not the best way to advertise your business. Although, as it turns out, people are so skeptical of what the government finds that they actually, some of these dairies that have had these announcements made, have found their business increasing. It's kind of a boomerang effect because people are just so skeptical of what the government has to say.
That's crazy.
But that's the kind of thing that's been going on. They're in Pennsylvania. There was a farmer, a Mennonite farmer by the name of Mark Nolt, who's had his farm raided 3 times by caravans of agents from Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture and the FDA and the Pennsylvania State Police, and they confiscate his milk and equipment. And he's been very resistant. He says he takes his orders from God, and He insists that he has the right to sell privately to other citizens, and he's still in business, and they have seemed to have left him alone for about the last year and a half.
I find it just crazy that the hysteria with which government treats raw milk is pasteurized milk held to the same standard?
People do get sick from pasteurized milk. Pasteurized milk has its own there's a whole, hundreds of pages of regulations that cover the pasteurization process and so forth. But there have been some widespread outbreaks of illness from pasteurized milk, mostly in the 1980s and 1990s. The situation seems to have improved with pasteurized milk.
But is the government as zealous in their enforcement on the pasteurized dairies?
No. I mean, I, in the sense that they don't shut dairies down, or they don't. When I say that, I mean it's more like they treat spinach or beef producers. Hmm. They publicize what happens, but then they are all allowed to reopen and so forth without all this "I told you so" kind of thing.
Well, I'll tell you, if you'd like to find out more about the Zinnikers farm in particular, you can go to farmtoconsumer.org or biodynamics.com, and they're trying to help out the Zinniker family, our raw milk dairy that's under pressure right now. If you want to educate yourself about this not-so-simple topic, David Gumpert's book is The Raw Milk Revolution: Behind America's Emerging Battle Over Food Rights, and it's really a pretty valuable read. David, thanks for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Good to be there.
And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. I'll tell you, Mark, this is an issue I feel very strongly about. I just don't get it. It's just...
Well, I obviously feel strongly about it, too, having my dad's farm was directly across the street from in New York State from a dairy farm. So we had access to raw milk all the time whenever, we go up on weekends or whatever. And it was great. And it
absolutely
was
delicious.
And we made yogurt out of it, and we did all kinds of things that you can do with raw milk that you can't necessarily do with pasteurized, homogenized milk from the shelf.
I had some raw milk at home within the last year or so. Somebody brought me a gallon of raw milk. And I had so much fun putting, first of all, it was delicious to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, I made some cocktails with it, some old-fashioned milk punches mm-hmm. and the like. I never really understood the milk punch. I never thought they were great.
Right.
Except with raw milk. Sure. It's really delicious. And health benefits aside, I can't help but think there are health benefits to it.
I just, this whole thing to me seems, there's always going to be zealots who do things that are outside the norm and they're going to be chased by the law, by the man.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always amazed. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago we read on air a letter from a woman that had been forwarded to us who was delivering raw milk.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she basically what she said was, I'm afraid, I feel like they're right on my tail. They're about to catch me. I can't sleep at night anymore. I'm going to have to give this up. I'm sorry to everybody that I deliver to, but I just can't do this anymore. It's ruining my life.
Yeah.
And I thought, that woman's trying to bring raw milk to people. And,
yeah.
She's not bringing cocaine. She's not
right.
smuggling, drugs across the border. She's just trying to get raw milk to people who want to drink it.
And look, we drank raw milk for thousands of years, for since the dawn of agriculture. I mean, it's just crazy to should we make sure that it's safe? Yes, we should make sure that it's safe. And here's another thing that's immature about American people. There is a certain amount of time in your life that you're going to get sick from something you eat.
Mm-hmm.
Left it out too long in the refrigerator. That doesn't mean that you're going to go in the hospital and die, mm-hmm. but you're going to have a tummy ache sometimes from something you ate. That's life. And if you don't want to have sterilized, pasteurized everything, then you have to accept that part of living is once in a while you're going to have something that upsets your stomach. What's the problem? I mean, if
my only problem right now, Francis, is that you said tummy ache.
I was trying to be condescending, and I'm so good at that. But I mean, you're gonna get. If when you live on a farm and you eat raw food and you eat locally sourced food, once in a while you might say, "Oh, I ate something last night that disagreed with me."
If you eat things that are not 100% sterile. Okay, if you if you dip your food in bleach, it's 100% sterile.
Well, or if you cook it super super well done and take all the flavor out of life, you can have a sterile environment. Well, I don't want that in my life, and I don't want the government to tell me that that's what I have to do. And by the way,
getting indignant.
Sorry.
I can see it in his eyes.
But with all this sterilized food that you mostly eat, because the distribution is so, I mean, one factory sends out millions of pieces.
Mm-hmm.
If there's contamination in that factory, which happens from time to time, you don't get a few people sick from one local dairy who may have a problem,
right,
or one local cheese place that may have a problem, get somebody. You can get, you know, Jack in the Box starts serving bad, has a problem with one of their processing plants. Well, you get hundreds of thousands of people sick, tens of thousands of people sick across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I know that there are some cases of serious illness, but if you look at one of the cases in his book that he talks about, in David Gumpert's book, he talks about whenever there's anyone gets sick from, and there's raw, and they've had, and they've consumed raw milk, they stop looking for another
cause.
That's
the immediate, it's immediately attributed.
So during
to
the spinach outbreak, the outbreak that was spinach-borne, some of the people who were hospitalized for the raw milk, and where it was attributed to raw milk, and are suing him for raw milk, and used as an excuse to cut down, to shut down one of these dairies for raw milk, also happened to have spinach during an outbreak of E. coli on foodborne spinach, yet they attributed it to the raw milk because raw milk was on the diet. That's a government that's biased. It's a government that's not looking at the science, and it's got to change. We're going to put a link up on our website to the Weston A. Price Foundation, which is a foundation that advocates for a sane milk policy, and you might want to check that out. And you also might want to check an old show of ours we did with Dr. Ron Schmid a long time ago.
About the health benefits.
But you should be educated on this issue, and you should try raw milk sometime in your life. Please don't sue me if you get sick. Hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I know we certainly have. I'm Francis Schock.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.